for using an example close to my own heart, and I was going to save this up for a reference tomorrow, but I should point out those cellar dweller Australian and South African teams do currently hold all of the top four positions on the Super 14 table. Now, that brings a really interesting collection of talk, thoughts about services and applications together, but I want to take the opportunity of asking Jane the first question, which is, given what you've told us about Generation Y, and I think, what did the ABS decide to call the next one? iGen, what I call the digital natives?
The next one after Y.
Mm.
Gen Z.
No, the Australian Bureau of Statistics came up with an interesting new name for it last week. And it's not Gen Z, it was iGeneration, and we also refer to it as the digital natives.
The iGen.
I mean, they're even more into this stuff than these people. If you go 5 years down the track, you've got those people making the decisions. Have they got any interest in what we just heard about football and pay TV content?
That's a good question. I think that some of them will, but the point really is that the interests are changing constantly. And there will be groups of, I guess, of that generation that are interested in this. I mean, we saw in the male profile particularly that sport was an identifying measure for them, one of the ways that they define themselves. Will it be mainstream sports? We don't know. I think the thing is that when you are catering to Gen Y, you've just constantly got to go back and check. You can't be certain of anything that was in the previous generation. We can't be certain that any previous fad or trend will exist in the next generation. It could, it may not, but the point is you've just got to go back and check all the time.
Right. I should point out that my own 22-year-old daughter spends her time evenly between watching rugby on Foxtel and spending her time on the Go Vitars website. All right. Does anyone from the audience have a question they wish to ask at this stage? Oh, we've got two, lots of hands up there at the back, and Benoit is going to join the fray for the first time. Start up the back with the gentleman in the gentleman who isn't Ralph.
Hi, everybody. It's Naveen again from Telecom Retail. Well, I am one of the Generation Ys, and one thing which I did not see covered in today's afternoon's topic was web hosting. If I'm graduating in a few months, I would want my graduation to be web hosted so that my relatives and friends can watch it online, one thing. And also private birthday parties, you know, stuff like that. And there are certain IPTVs already running in the market. For example, cricket, there's cricket going on. There are some websites, which I think it's $14.95 New Zealand per year to watch all the cricket matches. This is a website which is selling the video from Asia. So just a heads up. Thank you.
Do we have any responses to those observations, or just note?
Cheers.
cricket on the net. Not sure about that one yet. Ralph?
Yeah, hi. Malcolm, I'd take a wild guess you haven't acted for Sky recently. I think an observation on Malcolm's point is that the issues that you've raised there can't be solved, I don't think, independently from the government's decisions around fibre investment. They are complementary issues that need to be solved, in my view. I've got more of a question for Jane. And some of what you described about what Gen Y are into and interested in is completely foreign to me, and I don't consider myself too far distant.
Ask him, he knows.
Yeah,
he's
clearly. I'm interested in your observation of, you know, given that it's people who aren't Gen Y largely responsible for implementing what they're going to use, is there anything from your observation that we should be doing differently? And second question, obviously, with the Vine, you've made some good progress there, but how does that translate into value, i.e. money for Fairfax.
I remember a movie, I can't remember the name of it, maybe someone can help me out. It was about, I think Tom Hanks was in it, and it was about a company that made toys. And one of the things that they had was a 12-year-old on their board of directors. Do you remember that movie? I can't remember.
It was called Big, yeah.
Was it Big? Yeah. That movie, Big. And they had this 12-year-old on their board advising them, which proved to be a very successful recipe. I'm not advising 19 to 29-year-olds on the board of every company. But I do think what you have to be is in touch. One of the reasons we chose Life Lounge is because their major asset is research, and that they will constantly understand how to evolve the product, how the market is evolving. That's what they bring to the table, quite frankly. So making sure that when you're designing networks or anything of the future, that you understand first and foremost who the customer is. And it's that key question again. Who are you really building it for? And I think that's quite often forgotten, in the bigger picture of things, is that the way that kids use it, or that next generation, the generation beyond, use it will be very, very different. Don't underestimate wireless. Don't underestimate the mobile phone. I think in the next, certainly in some countries in the world now, we're seeing the mobile phone used as a replacement device for the PC, particularly in India and China. And countries like that, I would question, 15 years at Microsoft, I question the replacement rates of PCs and mobiles in more developed countries moving forward. So not underestimating, I guess, the changes in devices too in that generation is something to watch. How do we make money out of it? We have a policy. We're a publisher. Content is king to us. That's our great asset in the company, is content. We have not so much a policy, but a mantra of write once, sell five times. So we monetize everything we write through display advertising, through performance advertising, through behavioral advertising, through syndication, through replication. And if anybody who's building content isn't making a hell of a lot of money out of Google, then they really need to start doing that. So that's a very strong revenue stream for us is through Google and monetizing that again. And the last way that we do it, which is kind of an interesting one, is that we just took a strategic stake in a generic domain name business in Australia. That is a company that has 32,000 generic domain names, .com.au. They are essentially blank websites, and they've married engaged to a content company. Now, generic domain names like chair.com, floor.com, wall.com, pencil.com get 80% of the top six served up results in a natural search in Google. So we replicate our content onto those sites with clickbacks and linkbacks to our major sites, and that's been a cracker for us. We're just starting down that path now. We only took that strategic stake in May of last year, and we're really only just starting to get into that game, but that's been a good moneymaker, or will be a very strong future revenue stream for us. I think if you have a subscription model, and there are some that have been proven successful, such as the cricket one mentioned on your table, when you have a subscription model, the thing is that you must continually demonstrate value. And because value is a commodity that moves so quickly in this segment, it's very, very hard to do. Value has also been replaced by a drive for free. Some conversations around pirating of content, etc. It's very, very difficult to fight that. And so what we don't do is charge. We make our money, five or six other ways.
Benoit, down the front here. Microphone. Oh, sorry. You got beaten by Scott. We'll get to you next, Benoit.
Sorry about that. Hi, so Scott here again. A question inspired by Paul's very interesting comments. I keep hearing about the single submarine cable coming into New Zealand. Now, I've done some work in the Caribbean for the Jamaican regulator, and Jamaica has about the same population as New Zealand, close enough. The whole Caribbean has historically been very much dominated by a single cable operator, Cable and Wireless, but that's changed in recent years. Probably the most useful single policy initiative the Jamaican government drove was getting a second cable landed by a Canadian-led international consortium. Has anybody done an analysis what it would take to get a second submarine cable in here?
I think the minister has.
There's a slightly longer answer to that, Scott, which is yes, but the subtle difference is that for a Jamaican cable, you're going across to North America. For Australia, for New Zealand, the short route's across to Australia, but the bad news is there's nothing there either. So the long cable is back to America. Now, whilst there's some people now building another cable out of Australia, you do also wind up with some significant latency additions if you go the wrong way first and then back again. So there's some really interesting aspects of that. So it's actually a live conversation. Pema?
So actually I have a quick question for each of you. My question to Jane is, you're describing the end of trends and what I would describe as a fragmentation of interests. That seems to seep in quite nicely into the long tail theory. Do you subscribe to that, and do you think that that's an approach to solving that issue? My question to Paul is, if FTTH is so horribly unprofitable, why are you doing it? And my question to Malcolm is, I don't know if you're aware of the decision earlier this week by the French courts to break Orange's monopoly on the Football League rights. But do you think there's actually, for a telco, a sustainable position where they might be able to retain exclusive rights on any kind of content, which seems to be the only strategy to me that makes sense if you're going to be a content provider as a telco?
Take them in the order they were asked, I suspect.
Okay, so your question is around long tail and the end of trends. Trends haven't necessarily ended, they're just shorter. They're very, very short, and arguably that will make the long tail longer. I think that the key to the long tail is around searchability and metadata and being able to monetize it that way. One of the things that we build into, you know, kind of everything we do is the ability for people to find it again in a way that makes sense. And I think that, you know, not underestimating that layer when you're putting content on the internet is probably very, very key to that. I think, you know, anybody's really about to make a serious amount of money out of the long tail. We do it through the OMG example and through generic domain names. That's probably the best way for us to make money out of the long tail today, and we're doing that with the Vine and with other, I guess, with all of our audience segments as well. So it's interesting that we're seeing in the advertising market more of the revenue move to the long tail and away from the top five. And we're seeing some very interesting models for CPC, CPA style of buy in advertising that's really going to extend that long tail even further. Does that go anywhere near answering your question? Okay.
Paul?
Your question, if there's no money in fibre to the home, why are we doing it? A couple of reasons. First one is, ourselves as a company, we don't incur the infrastructure costs. But the main reason is it was a test bed for not proving that fibre will work, but proving the infrastructure provider at layer two versus the service provider with the NGN app sitting on top of it. That hadn't really been done on a scale for residential before over here. In parallel with that, there's also work on emergency services, 111 calling, nomadic services, what happens if there's a power cut, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why we entered the pilot.
And it was a little while ago, and I've sort of forgotten what your question was, but I think it was...
The French decision about content.
Well, I didn't know about the Orange decision, but that's interesting. I'll check that out when I get back to work. But it would certainly... I would say that unless a telco had access to some of this highly desirable, compelling content that does drive subscriptions, it's going to be very difficult to have a subscription-based IPTV service that's in any way successful.
Okay. You're right. Did you want to follow up? I've got a question down the back there. Is that right? And then I've got Kip at the front here. So if we can get the microphone back over here. And that might probably get us to the end, I'm afraid, unless there's a burning question from somewhere else.
Thanks. Tex Edwards from New Zealand Communications. Great presentation, Malcolm. Really insightful hearing about a monopoly that needs to be broken up. Would you...
Here we go again.
Broken record, I'm sorry. Couple of questions. Would it be correct, in your view, to say that maybe content in pay TV is similar in concept to the spectrum in cellular? And is significant market power being abused here? But more importantly, do you think that the pay TV market may evolve when we have a next generation network and we have fibre to the home, where the All Blacks get quite canny and change the value chain so you're not buying your pay TV All Black viewing from Rupert, you're actually buying it directly from the All Black website, and the All Blacks are collecting on the value chain as the consumer hits the website to buy the viewing of the game?
That's a very interesting question. I think that you're starting to see that sort of model beginning to emerge. Walt Disney distributes some of its content through iTunes, for example. And it's not yet common, though, for the content owners to bypass the traditional methods of distribution. The question will have to be for the All Blacks and the rugby union as to whether or not that is a better business model for them than selling to News Corp. It's hard to predict, isn't it? It could well be in the case, but apart from things like Walt Disney doing that, there's no real indication of that at the moment. I think what's different about this is that it's IP we're talking about, in this case intellectual property. It's not something physical, and I'll call spectrum physical for these purposes. So it's not your traditional bottleneck that we've all been kind of worried about for years. And I'm not certain, to be honest with you, Tex, that we do need to intervene. I think we need to look at it, though. I think we do need to look at it closely, and the fact that, you know, the French, the Italians, the Germans, the English, the Americans, the Australians, and so on have looked at this and decided there is a problem, I think is an indicator that we do need to address it. And I note that the government has got the Digital Broadcasting Review, and very wide-ranging, but it does include this sort of issue as part of it, and I just hope it goes ahead and they continue to examine it.
Okay, now Kip, you had a question, and then I will take that one question back there, but that's really the end of the questions. Sorry.
Kip Meek from the UK. My question is prompted by an aside from Jane about Google. One of the things that was sort of elephant in the corner that was unstated in the Digital Britain report, which some of you will have read, some of you won't, most of you won't, is there's no comment about Google. And Google in the UK, you know, has more than half of the online advertising revenue, and online advertising revenue, as we know, is beginning to dominate offline advertising revenue. I just wonder, I mean, obviously Fairfax and other traditional media companies have to work with Google, but you worry, are there any competition issues embedded in there that worry you? And I don't, if you could comment on them, I'd appreciate it.
We call them a frenemy. they're both friend and enemy. I think it's easy to make money off of Google, and they're making a bunch of money off us. I don't think that there's been enough focus on how to get money back from Google. And there are a bunch of really good ways to do that, and you've got to go pay some really smart people to do that for you. We've made a lot of investments recently in SEO, SEM, lots of acronyms, OMG, this generic domain name company. So we're making a lot of investments there. We're also talking, you know, with Google around opening up our archives and how, you know, Google will do it anyway. How do we get a piece of that? So we've got, you know, the last 20 years of news and information stored, and we're currently, you know, kind of doing a deal with them where they take our microfiche and they undertake the service to digitise that, and then we both can make money off the back of that. So it's just a matter of sitting down with Google. It's not in their interest to take anybody out of the value chain. They do want a bigger piece of the pie, but it is just a matter of, in our case, separating our business into five or six distinct pieces and figuring out where we play and where we don't. But they're a significant player on the landscape, and I think if you don't, you know, seriously consider how you can be a frenemy with Google, I think there's a David and Goliath story.
It is the good story. They do want to let you make money too.
Yeah.
Gentleman in the yellow is the last question, then I have a few comments of my own to make.
Hi, I'm Vinod from Telecom. My question is for Malcolm. We all know what iTunes has done to music. Why can't a similar business model be developed for IPTV? It's premium content, it's paid content, and it has IP, and now music industry, big music players like BMG and all are lining up to put their content on iTunes. So why can't something similar to be done for IPTV?
Yeah, well, that really comes back to my points before about Walt Disney, I think, in that it really does depend on the content owner, iTunes being a legitimate platform for distribution of content. And if the content owners don't want to go down that path, then, you know, it won't go through that. They'll use their more traditional distribution methods. It could well go that way. I mean, but right now, apart from the odd example, we haven't really seen it.
I guess it's the question of critical mass here, because even iTunes didn't have a smooth ride in the beginning. They were limited in terms of content, but because people have, from the consumer side, the behavior has shown that they have picked up this way of organizing their content, and they are comfortable with it, and probably Gen Y is more open to this kind of distribution model. Probably in the long term, you're right, it might pick up that way.
I think one thing to note about iTunes is that one piece of music is largely substitutable for another piece of music. And it's mostly music that is distributed over iTunes, but sometimes it's free-to-air TV programs as well. But then again, that's fairly substitutable. There's not too much that's substitutable for, you know, an All Blacks against South Africa game.
Or even an All Blacks versus Wallabies game.
I don't know. Maybe.
Can I intersperse something there? I mean, there is a subtle difference as well, which is that, especially in the live sport model, the live sport industry has not historically been a producer. It has been a provider of sport, and someone else has been the producer, in this case Fox Sports or Sky or whoever it is, of the News Corporation grouping. Whereas the model you're talking about in music, it was already produced music. It's not as if iTunes went to the bands. And that's the subtle difference in this model. And the suggestion at the back there perhaps will be where the sports go, because they are now facing a monopsony. There's only one buyer of the content. And when you have only one buyer of the content, he will start driving down the price. And if you were the sports organisation, you might start saying the way we have to do this is to grow the distribution channels by becoming a producer ourselves. For the record, the Australian scenario has not been actually a regulated intervention. It emerged as a consequence of deals that Optus and Telstra wanted to do for various reasons. That then meant that Foxtel made a number of undertakings. The first was an undertaking to make its content available to other distribution platforms, and it already had some undertakings about making space available. So Cintata, or whatever it's called, is actually now a channel on Foxtel. But it's very interesting, because one of the issues was about the channelize, about the packaging. And Foxtel was able to convince the ACCC that the deal had to be that you took the packages as they were. You weren't allowed to get the channels. Now, I'm reliably informed by some Foxtel people, they did some really interesting microeconomic analysis about why that was welfare enhancing process to package in that way. But unfortunately, it was a part of the unfortunately common process of confidential submission, so this wonderful piece of economic analysis is not available to us. I'm going to wrap there, but I do have to make one last observation, because I love it when I have Fairfax people around. Because back in 1994-5, I was the account director for the media portfolio in Telstra in Australia, and Fairfax was one of my clients, and their IT director, a guy called Frank McMahon in those days, was trying to figure out what to do about online content. They wanted to do something online, and Bob James, who's here with us today, was busily building On Australia as a platform with Telstra before it became an IP play. when someone else in our organisation decided that we should take to them the proposition they used, this thing we had heard about in America called Mosaic. And so we put the proposition to Fairfax in 1994 or 5 that they should build an online strategy using Mosaic, which, as you know, was the first web browser. Unfortunately, they didn't take our advice and went a completely different route. But I do like remembering how far back these discussions go. Can I ask you all to join me in thanking our three panellists or speakers? To remind you that we have a really busy day again tomorrow, but it's not quite as heavy, especially as we get towards the afternoon. You won't be dropping dead by the end of tomorrow, as you probably are now. We do start at 9 o'clock with Jos beaming into us from places afar, but then we get the really interesting strategic engineering policy and regulatory issues panel. So I'd hope you'll want to be here. Feel free to keep adding to our list of notes. And with that, I invite you all to enjoy Juniper's hospitality. Thank you.
Well, Consolizer is really crappy for me. We should talk. We've been having conversations about our interests. I love the two
I just wanted to check the panel on about this morning.
No. I sent an email out to Matt and others.
Yeah.
still access to capital and use that instrument.
So it's the same as an exchange, basically.
Well, then I'll bring the other question I may say to you, which is, why was there any way to I'll probably give it to you because of all I might just say something more about my brain, like, do you agree with everything that was said in the bill of all contribution? I just, it's a bit, sir.
That's good. Hey. That's good.
Well, it's always credit to Jane for a great question.
I thought this was a good one.
This one?
I think the conference was
I want to talk to Jane about when people should use their email address. You know, maybe they should just give them an email address they use to send in submissions. Could we just get people to send in random comments as a part of
this? All right, I'll see you later.
Okay.